Hello and welcome to Philosophy with Will Anderson. I'm Will Anderson from the title of the podcast. Thank you to everybody at the start, I will say, who has signed up to the Patreon page. There's been a bunch of new people who are now subscribers to this podcast, who are the people who help me put this on every week and make sure that podcast Mike and James Fosdyke and everybody else who's associated with the podcast gets paid for their time and their labor, making sure that it comes out weekly or as it's going to. I've been promising this for a couple of weeks, but there'll be a few bonus episodes this week as well. And Patreon, patreon.com/philosophy, that's Will with one L, W-I-L-O-S-O-P-H-Y. Oh man, I don't know why, but spelling that out loud always gets me. It might be tricky for you to find as well. Some people have given me that feedback. So please go to patreon.com/philosophy. You can subscribe for as little as a dollar a month. It's a dollar American, I think. So it's not quite, it's a little bit more than that. But you can subscribe and a monthly donation, and it really helps. If we could double the amount of subscribers we have right now, this podcast would basically, have the finance to come out weekly and everyone to get paid, and when we're able to travel again, me to travel to record some episodes and stuff like that. So that's kind of the aim. About double where we are now, and I'm going to put out some Patreon bonus content that is coming. I am having a decent think about what the best idea is and what might be best value for people, and people might want to actually be interested in consuming there. So I'm having a really decent think about that. But if you're on the Patreon page and you want to send me a message, I will see that. So maybe you have requests, maybe there's extra stuff that you would like. Some people have been giving me suggestions of guests who have been on the podcast before who they would love to have back. So happy to hear those as well. And some of those are actually coming up soon. So anyway, ramble, blah, blah, blah. Thank you for supporting the podcast is basically all I am saying. This is a returning guest. Loved this. This was fun. Alex Dyson. A lot of you might know Alex Dyson from his days of the Triple J Breakfast Show, but last time he was on the podcast, he was running for Parliament. So we talk about that. And then we talk about what's been going on during the pandemic, because he was going to run a bar and a venue as part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, and how that affected his life, and his book launched during the pandemic, which of course all the plans around that changed. We talk about, you know, what you do in this global moment when you've got things that are meant to be happening and then they don't happen, and how you use your time. And anyway, Alex is a really fascinating guy. He's got a million different things going on. He's a real ideas generator, and it's a great pleasure to talk to him, because he's one of those great guests where every time that you throw him a question, he comes up with a super intelligent answer that also inspires other conversations and other questions. And also, I think that a lot of what he does comes from the heart, from a place of real joy. So when you talk to Alex, it's always a great pleasure, or you always feel pretty good afterwards, because, you know, there's a sense of optimism and joy and dancing for the sake of dancing that that he brings to the podcast. So check out his new, his new old radio show /podcast. So Matt and Alex back together doing sort of a daily breakfast show, but not on breakfast radio. Anyway, we talk about that, and he's got a book and he's got an Insta, and he's doing all sorts of fun things during this pandemic time. So make sure you check out Alex Dyson and enjoy this episode. Thank you. Hello and welcome to Philosophy with Will Anderson. I'm Will Anderson from the title of the podcast. Thank you for tuning in. What I'm doing during these times that I'm going to call without precedent, maybe even unprecedented times that we are now living in, these uncertain times, I'd like you to know the Philosophy podcast is here for you. And the way that we're here for you is basically that I'm going back to previous guests on this podcast and checking back in, seeing what has happened in their life since we last spoke and how they're dealing with the times without precedents in which we live. So today's guest, who are you? That's how the podcast starts. Who are you?
I'm Alex Dyson. Pleasure to be with you, Will.
Alex Dyson. Well, look, if it were not a pandemic, there's been lots going on in your world between when we spoke last and now anyway, because when we spoke last, you were about to run. Well, you had commenced the proceedings to run for Parliament. That was when we last spoke.
It was. Yeah, that's a good thing, I guess, about having a guest with precedent in these unprecedented times that we can refer back to how the guest was last time. And you're right, it was on the eve of my campaign. It was a short and sharp 3-week campaign. And so, yeah, it was quick and over fast and I didn't win. And so not a lot changed in my life in that regard. But yeah, it was a really good experience and I'm quite glad that I gave it a crack.
What did you learn from the experience? What was your big takeaway from the time campaigning, throwing yourself in the deep end of the political system? What is it that you take away from that most, A, about the system and B, about yourself?
It's interesting. The thing I learned the most was nothing to do with the system or about myself. It was about other people, and seeing how other people see the world was super fascinating. Like, I went on a couple of just road trips around, like, Warrnambool is where I'm from and where I was based and whatever for the electorate of Warrnambool. But I drove up to Hamilton and went to a health clinic there. Someone got on my Instagram and said, hey, I'm a nurse here at this health clinic. Can you come and hold on and have a look at what we're doing here? And I went in and, yeah, this, like, Indigenous health in the area was, you know, really battling at that point. And seeing how things work there and just these experiences that, you know, I was working at inner city Sydney at Triple J and, you know, going to gigs and that sort of thing. And suddenly you're in regional Victoria seeing this, this place. Yeah, it was totally different to what I was used to, and seeing the world through other people's eyes was interesting. And then I went down the pre-polling and handed out a few of cards with my face on it and how to vote, and standing next to the guy who was handing out flyers for Pauline Hanson. He wanted Pauline to get into the Senate. He'd been at dinner with her the night before doing their Victorian Senate campaign. And I chatted to the guy, like, he's a nice dude. Like, he's just there, like, oh, good on you for running and that kind of thing. And this person who, if, you know, you see on a television screen and they just see the world totally differently from how you see it. But, like, there's, you have more similarities with the person than you do differences, and you can have this, you can want the same result than something, and you could go about it through different means. But yeah, everyone has, you know, some good in them, and I've found going and visiting those people. I think after that I went and drove to a guy I used to play footy with, dairy farm, and he was talking about electricity prices, and you sort of hear when the price wars are on and the carbon tax is gonna, you know, wipe out Whyalla or whatever these things. He works on the dairy farm. And he says his monthly electricity bill, because they got to turn the cows around and chill the milk and all that sort of thing, the monthly bill is $40,000. And I'm like, oh, that's a bit more than me just playing my Xbox on a, you know, Tuesday night or whatever. So if there's a party saying we're going to bring down electricity prices, then that could be the biggest issue for you rather than, you know, you go going, you know, green climate change sort of party. So yeah, I learned a lot about other people, I think. When it comes to what I learned about the system, yeah, I think I said at the time, you know, we've got a pretty good one compared to other countries. And I think that was okay. I mean, it was funny with the bingo balls picking them out of an actual cage to figure out what number you were on the ballot. Maybe we could update that system, but yeah, the preferential system's not too bad. And learn about myself. I don't know. I like that I could give things a go is the other thing I learned about myself. And yeah, you don't have to be scared to go into things, or scared about losing or that sort of thing. Yeah, I think that's what I learned.
Well, there's a couple of really interesting things that you touched on there, which was the farmer with the electricity prices. So that's a good one. Mm. So quite often we say, oh, this, you know, farmer, he voted for this person, and the reason he voted for this person is because he's a racist. You know, just to really overly simplify it, right? You know, whereas the reason he might have voted for that person was, as well as that party being a bit racist, they're quite good on electricity prices. And yes, when you or I hear electricity prices, it feels like, oh, yeah, okay, well, it's the difference between $600 and $800 on the worst months in winter when I have all the heaters on in the house or whatever. But you're talking about someone who might substantially be adding $20,000 or $30,000 to their monthly bill in a business that already has pretty low margins, like dairy farming, right? So if you just dismiss it outright as going, you can't be worried about electricity prices, without actually saying, okay, if we're going to change the system, which we need to do around power and how power is generated, and part of that is going to be pricing, but part of that is going to have to be investing in innovation around farming communities and other big businesses that use a lot of electricity, and offering them incentives to be getting more of that electricity from other sources, because you can't just go, we're going to put the price up, without giving them some path out of that destroying their business. So that I love. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, there was, well, I was standing on the I was standing on the breakwater in Warrnambool about to film a video for my campaign launch of me doing an interpretive dance, which ended up going a lot further than I thought it would. It got played on Fox News in America, and it got played on the BBC World News in the UK. And I'm, you know, spinning my arms around in a wind turbine motion and doing a train thing. Anyway, I was doing that dance, and this sort of guy comes up on the breakwater. This is before I jumped into the water in my dad's suit. And he said, "What are you doing?" Fair question, I thought. I'm like, "Oh, I'm running for parliament. I'm going to try and be an independent for Warnon." And he's like, "Oh, good on you. Are you for the farmers?" And I said, "Yes, because I am." And I don't want to like say to him no, but it's interesting in that moment, like, because I am the, you know, used to work at Triple J and, you know, really want to help the environment and that sort of thing. And I would like to help the farmers while doing that. Like, I'm not anti-farmer. When I was meeting this other guy on the dairy farm, like, I still have cow milk in my flat whites, and so it'd be hypocritical of me to then go, oh, we need to do less of that, but can I still, you know? So I'm not totally against the farmers at all, but I did have a moment where I'm like, if this guy found out, you know, if knew everything about me, would he think that I just lied to him by saying I'm for the farmers? And I'm like, but it was an interesting, you know, bit of self-reflection where I'm like, because I am definitely for the farmers. I'm for everybody. I want everyone to do it in the best way possible. It's just, I think a good way to help the farmers is to not have as much drought and to, yeah, stop the world from heating up as much as the scientists say it is. And yeah, but I found that interesting, a little bit of self-reflection as well, thinking like, is that my first lie in politics? Did I just lie to this man? And that was an interesting, yeah, thought-provoking moment.
Well, I don't think that you did, but the problem is that we want such, like, I mean, he's asked you a question that has a yes or no answer when it does not have a yes or no answer. Like, it is a qualified answer to that question, whether you're for the farmers or not for the farmers. Yes, you're for the farmers.
Yeah,
are you
exactly
for some of these other details that might hurt the farmers? No, I'm not for those details that might hurt the farmers. And okay, so that's the first thing. Because this is when it talks about energy in particular, this is where, you know, our opportunity was, and we've kind of missed it, but we can't just say we missed it. We still have to do it regardless, which was to say, we have this like old mining industry, old fossil fuels, all these people who work in those industries. We have to take some of those super profits of those industries and use them to retrain, so that when, like, there are new industries that those same people can work in. You can't just go, they can retrain to be a coder, right? Because they worked down a mine, now you're a coder. It doesn't work like that. But what you can say is, we have to shut down these old energy industries and we're going to develop these new energy industries. And guess what? You're an engineer in a coal mine. We can teach you how to be an engineer at a renewable, like, you work in a power plant. You're going to work in another power plant.
Yeah.
The power is just going to come from somewhere else,
yeah,
right? Like, that's really, if we can think about it, we can think about it in ways that you can go, I can be pro the environment, but also looking at ways to help these workers and make sure that they don't lose their jobs in that scenario.
Absolutely. And it seems better than simply propping up an industry, which seems to be, you know, rather than, you know, giving money to the car plants in Australia without changing any of the things that are getting them into trouble. Let's just give them more money so they'll limp on for another 9 to 12 months before the bosses decide, all right, well, we've showed the face, now let's just get out of here with our golden handshakes or whatever. The retraining is something that just makes so much sense when it comes to putting the world in a direction which yeah, can hopefully be more sustainable into the future.
Okay, and now the fellow who was handing out the how to votes for Pauline Hanson, because I want to talk about him as well. Because as you said, standing next to him, talking to him, he can be a nice guy. And we often have this experience in our lives of people that we go, he's a pretty nice guy. But once he starts talking about politics, you're like, ah, man, some of these things you believe aren't the things that a really nice guy would believe. And now I'm finding it hard to reconcile you being a really nice guy with you believing all these really not nice guy things. And so what do we do with that? Do you have any thoughts on, you know, how we better have that conversation, how we connect with that, how we deal with that?
Yeah, you've just got to go a couple of steps down the road, I think, as to why people think that. You know, do they not want refugees in Australia because they literally don't like the color of their skin? Or do you want to go, all right, well, what are you worried about? You know, like, well, I'm worried about, you know, our jobs. So we want more jobs, you know, is like, oh, that's good. I want more jobs too in this country, you know. So let's get a, you know, this use this common ground that we have to decide on a way that it does that. Because, yeah, I think you do go there, and I think there are some people you'll discover that are just generally racist, where you get to a point, like a lot of one of the ones that I find annoying is like, well, let's look after the homeless in our own country before we start letting people in. You go, great, all right, let's do it your way. Let's look after the homeless. Let's give these money to these shelters or, you know, these things. They're like, oh, no. I was just like, I want to keep that problem up there so I could use it as an excuse whenever people want to bring in refugees or something. So, yeah, I think some people are tokenistically saying these other issues, such as, you know, homegrown homeless. But other people would be able to potentially be talked around. And when you do find that common ground, you might be able to realize that there are, you have some similarities, and hopefully they can, see common sense and reason. But that's the other thing. I was handing out how to vote cards next to the, what was his name? Bernardi started the Conservatives in the Senate, which is interesting because when I was thinking about my campaign policy, it's like, I think common sense is a good one, but my common sense is very different to the Conservatives in the Senate, whose literal sandwich board out of the front of the pre-polling was bring back common sense. And so I'm like, well, if we can't agree on what common sense is, you know, how are people meant to pick their party that they want? Because they could look at me and go, oh yeah, Alex Dyson, he looks all right. I want common sense with him. They look at the other sandwich board and it's the Conservatives in the Senate who are, you know, anti-marriage equality and anti-many things, which I don't think is common sense. And they just see those words and they go, well, I don't know which one to vote for. Common sense is remarkably different depending on who you're talking to.
It's ironic that what we most define as common sense is the thing that seems to be uncommon. You know, it's always the things that differentiate you from others is that you know what common sense is. There is an actual implicit promise of togetherness in the expression, right? Because it is a common sense, the idea being a certain amount of principles that we all believe in, which is that perhaps everybody should have equal access to education and health and, you know, there should be some sort of social safety net. And we would think those things are the common sense and they're on behalf of everybody. But some people are just like, you know, no, 5G causes coronavirus. It's bloody common sense. And why won't people see it?
Exactly right. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. The family values, another thing, those people's values for their family are remarkably different. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we just should start a national database. So like, all right, what is our common sense and what can we agree on? So then we finally know it's written down on stone tablets. Maybe we could come up with a way to just, you know, keep track of what we shouldn't do.
Well, I mean, there is an element, and I know it's probably overly simplistic and overly hopeful, but there is an element of combining something you said, which is about finding that way you can approach somebody and have a conversation where, I mean, this is the comical extension of it. But if you could sit down, you know, Alex Dyson, who believes in common sense, and the Cory Bernardi party member who also believes in common sense, and you could go, look, let's not start as two people who disagree on everything. Let's agree that, like, the idea that there are common values that we should all sort of have and stand up for is something that we both actually believe in. Now let's have a conversation within us both kind of understanding that about the differences in what we believe are common values and common sense. And I do think there could be a better way for us to have those discussions and reach out to those across the aisle. But maybe that is overly simplistic and you know, Pollyannish thinking when it comes to the actual world of what people believe and how they believe it.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I remember, what was it? Cooper's came up with the keeping it light way of bridging the gap, where I think it was Tim Wilson MP and someone else drank a Cooper's Light and talked about, you know, gay marriage as to whether that is that. And it was a, you know, it was a robust yet civil discussion about one person who didn't want gay people to be able to form a union in the same way that, you know, straight people could. And the other person was saying that I think we should. And Cooper's got boycotted as a result. Now, I don't, yeah, people started, yeah.
I remember this distinctly because it was during the Adelaide Fringe Festival. Oh. And I normally drink Coopers on stage, and no one would let you walk out on stage with the Coopers because it suddenly felt like it was a, like I might as well have come out in the, like the Confederate flag draped around my shoulders to Kid Rock because I wanted exactly. to drink a pale ale.
Yeah. So I guess that's the issue, because the people who are tempted to, you know, keep it light and have that conversation, if it's not the conversation that a certain group want to be having and they begin the boycott, which is a good way of, you know, voicing your annoyance with some people. But, you know, obviously, say it could go too far sometimes. Whether that is a time where it went too far, it was a completely reasonable one, I am unsure. But I do remember it. That's one that springs to mind when you ask the question, how do we have that discussion and come and reach the middle ground, because it's dangerous to do so. It's been proven.
And yeah, and look, there's a very valid argument to be made that middle ground in of itself is a terrible idea, because the right-wing parties just go right more and more to the right, so the middle becomes more and more to the right. So if you are in any way socially progressive, the idea of finding middle ground on things, but the idea of finding common ground to start a conversation about what is really going on, to be able to, like, if you just say to that, you know, the climate change denier, if you never are able to engage with them in any way to move that conversation, anything out of that they deny it and don't believe in it, then how do we ever go forward and fix what we need to fix?
Yeah, I don't know. One I thought about climate change recently was one of the catch cries of people who don't believe in the science are, or don't believe in human induced climate change, is, you know, the world's had natural fluctuations over millions of years, okay? You know, it's natural for things to go this direction. And I realized recently, like, because I was thinking about that in terms of the Ice Age, for what I know, and the pictures of mammoths I've seen in books, show it was a pretty chilly time. And that was natural, right? It wasn't human-induced. But it sucked. And if humans could stop it becoming an ice wasteland... And stop the natural, you know, descent into a freezing apocalypse, then we should. If the reef is bleaching, if everything's doing this naturally, then we as humans should step in and try and reduce it any way we know how. Even if it is natural, we should give it a crack. Anyway, that's what I thought.
Yeah, because it's exactly, like, I mean, essentially you're arguing against sheltering yourself from a storm.
Yeah.
It's like, why do I need a roof on my house? It's natural. Sometimes lightning will just strike in. I'll take my chances. Exactly, it's nature's way.
Exactly, yeah. So maybe that's the way to get on the side of people who think it's natural, is like, I agree with you. Let's really subvert nature here. Let's take Mother Nature to town.
Well, okay, so let's talk about the environment, because I think that in the terms of where we're at in this global pandemic, like the conversation that we still need to be having around, yeah, climate change and the environment looms larger. In fact, we're probably going to have 12 months off thinking about it seriously in a way we really needed to think about it seriously. And then when the world goes back to work, there's going to be this amazing imperative to consume more and, you know, get back up to speed as quickly as we possibly can. And so many of these concessions that we were going to make, there's going to be an excuse to go, we can't do that anymore because the sacrifices we've already had to make. Now, this pandemic to me feels like it's been a practice run. You know, this was our go at having a, like, because there's other bad stuff coming. If the science is right, and the science was right on this one, and maybe the upside can be that we have a little bit more trust in science. But as I saw somebody comment today, they said, well, all this proves is that Scott Morrison does believe in science. He trusted science in this. So why is he choosing not to believe it when it comes in terms of the environment? And then you've got to say, it's not that they don't believe experts. It's that they have an imperative of some kind not to believe the experts. And that in itself is interesting. But what do you think in terms of the environment? Are you scared of what's happening right now? Like, you know, before we get to the pandemic itself, its effect on, you know, the broader world and our broader discussion about climate change, where do you feel like we're at?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty hopeful with coming in because you've seen, you know, there's been memes of things returning, nature is healing and that sort of thing. But to a certain extent, like, it is definitely helping. But you're right, when it comes to coming out of, you know, the lockdown that we're in, we don't want to be the person who binge drinks after Dry July and just absolutely ruins any progress made in the month off. But
we will be told to, because that is going to be the way the economy recovers. You can already see it. And I mean, I think there's some great value in this idea of buy, take away from your local business, you know, help them get through the crisis. I actually like a lot of those ideas, but you know, it's just going to ramp up and ramp up, and we're going to be encouraged to take holidays and fly more and spend, you know, more time, you know, consuming things as a way to help businesses regrow. So I kind of feel like we are going to be the binge drinker after Dry July.
Yeah, you're right. There will be an element of that, but the problem being, and the good thing about this is it showed all of the arguments leading up to this lockdown were, you know, sure, we'd love to do more on climate change, but it's too much. Like, we can't shut down the economy. We can't do this. We can't lose jobs. It's like, we have. We've now done it in a perfectly, you know, valid pursuit of keeping everyone healthy. And so anyone after this who says that we can't, obviously it's no, we have to just want it bad enough, you know, and take effective action quickly. It'll be interesting to see whether people flat out lie and say, well, you know, it's out of our hands again. There's no way that we could do this, because it can be done as it showed, if the will and the problem is big enough. It's just whether people can wrap their heads around, watching the graph go up so starkly and having family members or people infected. It is a scary thing. It depends if the fear or the reaction is big enough, because it showed that, you know, as a society, as a planet, that it's possible to lock down. But it's going to take a big scary event. But the bushfires were that, so Who knows?
Yeah, but people have forgotten about the bushfires. It happened like five months ago. This country was on fire, and the pandemic seems to have erased that from people's minds. And even just in a social sense, there does feel to be a bit of me that is like, yes, we shut everything down for 2 months, the pandemic hasn't gone away, and everything's reopening. Like, it's like we just got to the point where we were like, nah, we can't handle this. Regardless of the dangers, we're just going back to our everyday life.
But I think Australia is in a much better position to do that than America is, you know, having states with multiple, like, even weeks of zero new cases to be able to go, all right, we could start getting back into it. Whereas America's just plateaued and then they got a bit bored of it and so opening up again. So I think I am encouraged by Australians taking it quite seriously, because this is the first thing that internationally you can almost rate other countries against each other. You could put on a graph how different countries have gone, and I think we've done pretty well. There have been a couple of rather loose protests from people when we were just opening up and they were coming and demanding the open up. It's like, yeah, we're doing that on Sunday. What are you? We're like, no, we want to gather
because of
and
us.
Protest.
I feel effective. That's the best way to protest for something. 3 days before they're actually announcing they're doing that thing, that is the best time to really feel like an effective processor.
Exactly right. Oh, man. I feel it's like, yeah, you just want to... It's like someone who's tapping in a goal. It was already going in and you just tip your foot out and claim it. Yeah. Goodness me. But, yeah, I think Australians have done it pretty well. The thing that I'm worried about, and this is, you know, part of when we did talked about the politics, part of the reason I was getting into it, I was really annoyed at the discourse. And I think the global financial crisis is the closest direct comparison to, you know, how a government responds to an international, you know, incident where jobs are being lost all over the place. And the Rudd government was internationally applauded for the way that it got through the pandemic. The global financial crash, except it was applauded by everyone except for Tony Abbott and the opposition, because they were so effective at saying it's a debt and deficit disaster. The schools stimulus was rubbish. This is all rubbish. We're in so much debt. This government can't handle anything. And then, you know, they scrape through for another term of Gillard and then they're booted out because of the rhetoric. And if the Labor Party on the back of this came in and said, it's a disgrace, they've handled this terribly, you know, all of this has gone wrong, that sort of thing. You know, it's a tough thing to do, but the Liberal Party, I think that they would be absolutely offended if someone said that about them, because I think in both instances, the government has done a relatively good job at getting through, you know. There's been mistakes, absolutely. There's things could be left a little bit late. Things could have been explained poorly. There was a lot of errors going through. But as you can see, when you measure it up against other countries, I think we've done reasonably well, which means the bit that it'll annoy me is when it comes out of it, they'll want to be praised for the effort they did. And they want to say, we should be on top of the world. We've done better than all these countries. We're the best. But they didn't extend that courtesy in opposition to a government who had done something similar. And for that reason, and you know, we haven't got there yet. Maybe they'll say we're a little bit harsh to the Rudd government when they went through, but I doubt it. I don't think they will. So anyway, we'll see what comes out of the wash there, Will.
What about the pandemic itself in relation to how you view the world? Has it changed in any way your priorities in life? Has it changed in any way the way that you look at the global population or your neighbourhood? Has there been any substantial change in the way that you think about things because of this global pandemic?
I was talking to a friend who lives in LA, and I was just asking what's life like in LA at the moment. And he said, oh, it's not too bad. We live in a neighbourhood where everyone's wearing masks. They're watching out for each other. You know, they're keeping their distance, they're being respectful and whatever. But we took a road trip to another part of town, which is, you know, has a different vibe where people were sort of more in it for themselves. The toilet paper hoarding side of things, the not wearing masks, you can't tell me what to do, I'm my own person, I'll do what I want kind of things. And that made me really think about, yeah, the world as far as, yeah, being respectful and helping other people. And I think if you give, yeah, I want to live in a world in which that is the norm. And I think for the most part, Australia has done pretty well. There was, you know, a couple of weeks where things went a little bit hectic with the toilet paper, but on balance, when you help each other and when you're conscious of not just yourself, but the others around you, I think not only there's the vibe better, but you get through it better. It's a lot easier. It's better on your mental health. It's better on your physical health. You could you end up with more toilet paper on aggregate. You know, it's I think the thing I have learned is that, yeah, the empathy and the respect and that is definitely the way to go in this. And I would be happy to extrapolate it to every other scenario. I think that's the way to go.
And are you optimistic that we will take it back into the new world, or will there be a desperate need for us to return to how things were beforehand?
I hope we get out of it. Yeah, it's one of those earth-shattering things where, like, it's very unpredictable. the Spanish flu. I don't know enough about it. I don't know how the world rebounded out of that. We went into a world war, didn't we? So it's probably not the most optimistic outcome. Oh, wait, was it in the 20s? I don't know. But hopefully.
But a world war at this stage would need, like, you know, say the biggest country in the world who has the most weapons to be an incredibly vulnerable position, the only way out of it being a worldwide war, I would imagine.
There needs to be a lack of leadership in their country. There needs to be anarchy. There needs to be civil unrest. And luckily, there's not a country that springs to mind with any of those criteria. No. And so that should be fine. Nor another superpower who's really annoyed with other people asking for an inquest into where indeed this particular virus came from is threatening to economically, you know, kneecap a country that is reliant on, I can't think of any of those.
I think it's fine as long as the leader of one of those two countries doesn't keep picking fights with the other country. We should be fine.
But the good thing is I saw Donald Trump give a really inspiring speech the other day about, you know, mankind joining together and coming out victorious. Oh no, that was Donald Trump's head superimposed over the president from the movie Independence Day, which he retweeted with his own head talking about how the world came together to get rid of the aliens. Thanks to Will Smith. Are you kidding me? Anyway, that's a side note, Will.
Okay, so what about personally?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, look, I don't know how much you've talked about this or how much you want to talk about this, but the coronavirus, of course, really, Melbourne, it was basically, I connected to the Melbourne Comedy Festival because it was around that time. And for me, it was the thing that most felt like, oh, for fuck's sake, this is a real thing that's definitely going to affect a lot of people that I know, including myself, who I also know.
Well, you were the one coming into the comedy festival that I thought about because I'd seen your posters around the place and they were next to each other with two different shows that you were going to have a very big festival in that you'd done a lot of work to put it all together, to get things ramped up, and then 2 weeks out to have it all called off was a bit of a shocker.
Well, it was a bit of a shocker, but look, you know, everybody had things go away, but you were you had Melbourne Comedy Festival plans as well.
Yes. No, me and Kyron Wheatley, my good friend and you know, fellow ex-Triple J business partner, we'd started a pop-up bar for the previous comedy festival. Went really well. We're going to run it again for this festival. And because another venue was doing so well selling chicken parmas to people who were going to see Harry Potter, that they decided their commitment to some comedy acts who were booked to play in their room, they booted them out. And so the comedy festival sort of asked us, I know you've got this. I know you're looking at doing a more permanent venue as well, which we had a license over. Do you reckon you could house a few comedians? And so we were going to have 159 comedy shows across two venues for the comedy festival. We'd purchased a bar, we'd purchased the alcohol, we'd purchased 155 seats to go in there, got the liquor license. We'd, you know, done all the puppeteering. Aaron Gox was going to perform. Karen from Finance was in there. Kirsty Wiebeck ready to get up on stage every night. And then the sort of the whispers and the things start happening. You're like, all right, well, there could be, it went from going, oh, well, people might be reluctant to risk it, to like, oh no, it's just all called off. The governmentally, you know, decreed that it's all done. So it's just poor timing. And it happened to a lot of people, yourself included. And, you know, just a damn shame, isn't it?
So, okay. But so how do you deal with that? Because one of the biggest issues in this time, because you don't want to be a celebrity singing Imagine, hoping that that helps people from your mansion, right? Like, I am
exactly right.
Super, super aware of the fact of how lucky I am that, you know, out of this time, even though, yes, I lost a lot, it would have been probably what I'd planned for the year about, I'll end up losing probably 90% of the money that I was going to make this year. So it'll be a big deal, and that'll cause problems in my life.
Did you do JobKeeper?
I officially have JobKeeper now. And
me too. Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks, ABN Sole Trader.
Well, it was very easy to. They said you've got to, like, I can't even remember what the statistic is. It's like you've got to be earning, like, I think 30% of what you were earning at the same time last year. Last year I was doing commercial radio and I'd just come out of the comedy festival and now I'm earning $0.00. And so it was pretty easy to make case, it turned out, for me and JobKeeper.
Yeah. You're not going to need to check up on that one. The question I like, because I got onto the phone with them and, like, they asked the question, are you 30% down? They also said, will your annual income exceed $1 billion? Like, I think I should slip under. I didn't even need to go to the books to check that one. I was pretty sure I would be underneath.
So we all know that we are still in a very privileged position. We live in a country that seems to have got on top of things a lot, that has offered support from the government. You know, like, there are flaws in that support and who it goes to, and there are plenty of artists and, you know, all those sort of people who've missed out on getting that support. And so there are holes in the safety net all over the place, but there is a safety net of sorts, and we lived in a, you know, we live in a privileged country in a privileged position. But how do you reconcile that you are personally hurt by something, you know, something you would invest a lot of time and energy and money and all these sort of things in the context of everybody else is going through it, and there are so many other people who are going through it a lot worse than you're going through it, but that doesn't mean that you're not also going through it.
Yeah, like, I am going through it, as everyone is, but the way I looked at it is that the good part is we still want to do a comedy club in Melbourne and want to put that on, and, you know, it's in the works to be happening. And yeah, I wish I could, you know, say more concrete plans, but hopefully in the next couple of months we'll have something up. And so I saw it
99 seats, a meter and a half away from each other.
Yeah. Like, it could start out, like, we're looking at the live streaming aspect. Like, there's just a lot more legwork to do, but financially, you know, we've sunk a bit of our money into it, but I'm looking at it's not so much a loss in that it was totally taken away. It's like, okay, well, this dream has been delayed, you know, potentially 12 months, potentially longer. Yep. You know, like a lot of people in the entertainment industry, it's built on large groups of people gathering close together and enjoying some sort of form of entertainment. And yeah, hopefully there'll be a world in which we can and do that in the future. But yeah, it's a shame that this year, you know, we're not kicking back after comedy festival going, how fun was that? You know, how great was that? All our hard work paid off and we're reaping it both financially and, you know, socially and enjoyably. But yeah, I like to think that I get through by thinking, okay, I haven't lost all of this money, rather than it's like, okay, we're kicking the can down the road a little bit and we'll hopefully be back. Because you're right, we're fortunate enough to be in a position where it's not the end of a lot of things. It's just like, hopefully a pause.
It will be interesting to see, though, how art recovers, because, as you said, particularly the comedic arts, when you're not only jamming a whole bunch of people in a room, because that's what people don't realize, is it's not just you know, the lounge, cafe lounge in Sydney, a great room that ran there for a decade or more, went under during this time. And there'll be other smaller rooms that go under because the pub will no longer be able to afford, you know, getting the right amount of people in, because they'll have to be social. You can't jam 100 people in a basement, you know, all up against each other for a while, all these sort of things. So that's the lower rung of the industry and how it exists there. And so that's going to be tough. But also, you're not going to be able to do it at the top end either, where you say, I'm going to get 1,000 people or 2,000 people or 3,000 people in a room, and what I'm going to do for an hour and a half is try to make them expel their fluids out of their mouth in and around everybody. Like, it's like literally the worst thing that you could possibly do in that situation. So there is a fear, because I was saying this to a bloke at the shops the other day who was celebrating the fact that, you know, things were starting to reopen. And he said, you know, it's good to be able to get back to work. And I totally understood that. But I also said to him, I said, I don't know when I'm going to get back to work. Not the work that I, you know, really love to do and the thing that I, you know, is kind of my main job. I don't know when that's coming back. It might still be a year from now. I hope it isn't, but it might still be.
Yeah, it's it's scary. And particularly, you know, because I've had the last year, I've had that window into the business side of things, when places are announcing that you are allowed 10 people, provided it's, you know, 4 square meters or 20 people. I'm just realizing it's like, you barely make money at, it's hard enough to make money when this isn't on, you know, it's difficult enough to make a living in hospitality, particularly in the CBD of places. You know, there's so many factors that go into it, that it's just not viable with everything available to you, let alone a restriction on how many people you can have into a space. And so, yeah, it will be very interesting to see. And, seeing places go on the market, like the Gasometer in Melbourne, a live music venue, is up for sale. But it's also like, who's gonna purchase? It's a bloody big risk. And even like when talking about this new comedy venture, like even getting the banks on board to literally act, you need a ID when people sell tickets online. You need a bank or a financial institution to be able to take a booking, basically. And we've gone to two of the big banks, one of which is one that has billboards around everywhere, and their website is full of their catchphrase, "We're here to support you." And you go, "Oh, we're going to sell tickets online," and you know, that, and it's like, "Sorry, too high risk for us." And we're like, "What? What? You're meant to be supporting." They're like, we're not going to be doing that. I'm sorry, because there's no pathway out, and it's not their money, but they're worried that we could sell tickets or something, not deliver it, lose the money that people have paid us and not be able to refund them. And then the people are going to be angry and come after the bank that allowed the transaction to take place. So that's, you know, that's a problem we've been dealing with over the last little while. And I'm sure there are many more out there that people are facing in this recovery. And yeah, just the arts as a whole would find that difficult if they just need to do something as simple as set up an online transaction account. It's, it's pretty scary.
How have you dealt with the personal effects, as in like just in a life sense? What's it been like for you to stay at home? Are you a person who's comfortable, you know, being at home? What is it that you've been passing your time with?
It's weird because the worst I've sort of felt in lockdown has been I've overcommitted myself to various things. Because I guess being in this sphere, and I'm not sure if you're the same, like, because my usual fare is to come up with funny videos or to, you know, host something or to do a podcast or to do that. A lot of people have been getting in touch like, "Oh, can we host, we're going to do a live stream of this. Can you jump in? Would you mind sending a video through for this? And could you quickly record a little package that we could do that?" And so like some of my busiest days, I've just like got so much content to create that by the end of the day, I'm just like absolutely spent. I remember I got home from, I was filming a video clip. There's an Aussie artist, Alice Ivy, and this was like a really fun one, so I'm very glad I got to do it. But she asked me to do a dance for a video clip. So I was shooting a socially distanced dance in Melbourne's The Lithuanian Club. And then I got home and it was the day my book was coming out. And my book launch had been cancelled and my appearance at the Sydney Writers Festival was all cancelled. And so suddenly it's like up to me to, you know, do all the promotion for my own book coming out rather than just sort of rocking up to other things that other people have organised. So I get home and I'm like, "Oh, okay, what am I going to do here? All right, I'll get the DJ decks. We'll put them out the front." Because I was meant to do a DJ set in Readings in Carlton, like the bookshop, just an afternoon DJ set. And because the book's about music and a young kid who gets into it and has a song go viral. But anyway, so instead of doing a DJ set in Readings, I'm like, "All right, I'll do it at the front of my house for our neighbors." So I got the DJ decks out the front and I'm just there and I'm so tired. I'm really flat. I'm like there, like I drop one thing and I'm so really frustrated. And then you put it up on I put the DJ decks on my wheelie bin and I'm like, the girlfriend who's out the front, she's done such a good job at dealing with all my content crap and holding a camera for me for just weeks, Will. I'm eternally grateful. But anyway, all right, recording? Okay, here we go. And then I start dancing, book in the air, let's go, my book's out, woo! Dance, 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 cut. Oh, thank God that's over. All right, what do you want for dinner? Like, let's go inside. And it's just been that real. That's real. You're just exhausted. You're flat. Everything's in lockdown. You're just sitting there on the couch, not doing anything. It's like, all right, you ready for it? We got to film this. Okay, let's go. Bam, 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 bam. Cut, done. Like, I'm over this. So I'm not sure if the side that people are seeing of me, because I've been doing these exercise classes as well every Tuesday and Saturday, where I host a Zumba session, but it's just me making up dances to songs. And so that's quite funny. I come home one night and I'm tired from something, and I'm like, ah, damn it, I got to make up some dances for tomorrow. So I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll hip thrust there, yep. All right, spin. Okay, good. Yeah, that'll work. And then in the morning, I'm like, hey, guys, let's dance. So it has been, you know, ups and downs, but overall, it's positive. And I, you know, I'm always happy after I do these exercise things, and I'm really stoked that the book's out. It's just funny. I've got content fatigue at times. So that's how I'm handling it personally, I think.
Well, because, I mean, you are producing a lot of things. I mean, the book, like you said, the book did come out, and you're back doing radio as well.
Yeah, doing the podcast with Matt O'Kine, which is super fun. I've been really enjoying that side of things. Like, Matt's super easy to talk to, and we had such a good time co-hosting Triple J Breakfast together. And this, yeah, it's come together really well. I think having a show, because, you know, whenever people tune into Breakfast Radio in the car, you catch, you know, a few ads, then it goes into one talk break, and then the news happens, and then you're already at work by the time, you know, the Like a Version cover's coming up, so you got to miss it. And so, yeah, having a – and the podcast of those is just a radio show that is a radio show, just cut up, and you can listen to what happened on the radio show. So having a breakfast show that is people know that it's recorded specifically as a podcast – it's been really good, and people responded really well to it. They're super stoked that, you know, me and Matt are doing stuff together, and it's been like super fun. And like, I think the best comment was someone was like, it's like, oh, it was actually, and they weren't talking to me. I looked at a conversation online on a forum or something, like, did you hear the first episode? It was actually really good. And so I was really, it was actually really funny. Like, even as a first episode, like, for a first episode especially. And so, yeah, I'm glad that it's, you know, the quality is still high, and yeah, we can do it. And podcast one's been pretty good with me and Matt getting us together and, yeah, working it out in this socially distanced times, which is something that's always a bit tricky as well, because we were meant to have a big launch and film some videos together, and, you know, all that fell in a hole as well. And so we may do, but that was pretty, yeah, that was lucky that I had that coming up as well, in that I didn't have to worry so much, and, you know, the job keeper wasn't quite as crucial as it may have been, you know, and as bad as a whole bar collapsing would have been if I didn't have some, that to look forward to as well.
Okay, so there was some element at the very least of you can put your energy into other things.
Yes, yeah, it was good having that on the horizon. I didn't have to worry as to about, like, okay, what the hell am I going to do? What the hell am I going to do now? Having this daily, you know, podcast, which we could focus on, and which we're going to be doing for, you know, a good stint. Yeah, which hopefully we can grow and have people listen every day. And yeah, it's been fun really getting back and, yeah, talking to people. On the one we recorded yesterday, we had our first live birth. We talked to a woman in labor and her partner, and she was 10 hours in. And she was, you know, keeping on a brave voice. You could tell. I think if I didn't know she was in labor, I probably wouldn't have guessed, but I would have known something was up. but yeah, I think later on we're talking to them. I think they've had the baby, and so we're going to talk to them and find out what its name is. And yeah, that was really cute. But yeah, having stories like that it's been really fun again as well.
And what's it like? How long was it? Had it been since you and Matt had worked together?
We'd done two shows on the Sunday Night Experiment, which was an SCA show from 8 till 10 on a Sunday night. And that was really fun to do. And it's like, just felt super comfortable, like, you know, not having hosted a commercial radio show before. You don't know what to expect. But it was really great. You go in and you just have... You just talk the top. It's the same thing. You know, you're just talking with your mate. And if something feels icky, you go, no, I don't want to talk about that. And so, yeah, it's fine. I think I thought it would be scarier than it was.
Are you different people, though? Because this is what's interesting to me. Like, you know, does the dynamic change? Because, I mean, I had Adam Spencer on this very podcast last week or the week before. And it's always interesting when I talk to Spence, because I talk to him every morning, you know, for 5 years. And You know, we talked a lot. It was back in the days where you could, we didn't play a lot of songs some mornings. We used to talk a lot and we had no ads and stuff to get to. So we would talk a lot. Yeah. And
I remember, you know, that was the first radio show I called into one morning. You're doing.
Do you remember what you called in? Yeah, about.
Yeah, it was what's really annoying. It was. I think it was quite a broad topic. Let's be honest, from Adam and Will. There was a real broad one that day. But I called in, and I would have been like 15 or 16, I think. And I called in, and I found in windscreen wipers the little shark fin that's left in the middle, like you watch it every time and the windscreen wiper misses that section every time. And I used to sit in the back seat and just look at it and just go, get out of here. Like, get wiped. Anyway, I called in for that, but I think you'd had too many calls. I mean, you did cast a wide net that day, so I'm sure the board was already full.
I'm disappointed that we didn't get to that. That is actually a really good thing to be annoyed. That today, if I was on a commercial radio show today, right, and I got that call, that would be our number one go-to call. I'd be like, let's finish on this windscreen wiper kid.
And having then worked at Triple J and taken a lot of calls, like, I would have thought, oh, having a 16-year-old call up and talk, like, that's gold. Get them on. Mm. But I do remember one, Adam agreed with this one, was when the sign that's for a slippery road, the axle switches over and goes the other side. Like, it's the car can't, you know, can't do that officially. And Adam agreed with the caller and that was stupid. Anyway, that's what I remember from your show. But you were telling the story about Adam jumping back on the podcast. Sorry.
Well, all I was going to say is that we were, you know, I was 25 years old, you know, and we were very different people, you know, back then to what we are now. And we've got very different life experience. So it's always interesting to go back to that conversation because we come back to it as, you know, sometimes the same people we were, but sometimes very different people to what we were.
Did you find the old you shining through, the 25-year-old Triple J breakfast presenter, sometimes just like coming out? Did you slip back
into that? Well, in the way that we make fun of each other, it's still very the same things. You know, we're still pretty much making fun of each other about the exact same shit. But I guess the references have changed, but the dynamic's pretty similar.
It's better than Matt O'Kine. He doesn't change his references. It's still Sonic the Hedgehog. It's still Alex the Kid. At Triple J, we had a meeting one day. And I don't think I'm officially meant to be talking about this. I remember we had a meet.
Come on. If people make it to the end of the podcast, they deserve something.
Exactly. Congratulations. Here is your prize. You've reached the treasure room, as it happens in Alex the Kid. We had a young person come and try and teach us, teach Matt in particular, a few more recent references about things that happens, like, you know, after the Sega Mega Drive was the most popular game system for the youth of today. And so, yeah, I found that quite funny because he's just looking bewildered.
In fact, you've got one of those. Last time we spoke, I couldn't pronounce Billie Eilish. Whereas, like, in between then, it would be impossible from when we had that conversation to now, it would be impossible to go through your life and not know how to say Billie Eilish. But that was the last recorded moment that somebody did not know how to say Billie Eilish.
That's a good time capsule right there. Yeah. Goodness gracious.
That would be my go-to if I needed to name something that young people were into. I would just, you know, like, if my in that reference moment, I'd be like, TikTok, Billie Eilish.
I think when I saw Scott Morrison refer to TikTok the other day, I'm like, goodness me, these references are coming thick and fast. Well, that's because writing the book as well, like, I had to change my novel because originally, like, he's shared the song on Facebook, and then by the time I'd finished writing it, sort of 3 years later, they're like, I don't know how many 16-year-olds are on Facebook anymore. And so, like, quick rewrites as to, like, sisters sharing things. And anyway, it was they move quickly these days, Will. They really do.
Okay, well, you have to finish up because you have to record your radio show/podcast.
We've got a cool guest called Will Anderson on the show today. I don't I don't think we're even going to hang up after this. I think we're going to keep the good times rolling, but just have it on a different show.
There you go, people. Real insight for those who made it to the end. Somebody asked me on my Patreon page, and here's the thing about my Patreon page. It's patreon.com/willosophy, WILOSOPHY. And I always appreciated the people who signed up there, but right now it is my only income, so I super appreciate them. And I've been trying to show them some super appreciation and love. So anyone who's sending me a message on Patreon, I'm trying to get back to everybody. And it's a good place if you want to suggest a guest for the podcast or you want to have a conversation around something that was said on the podcast. I don't always see it when it's on the other social medias, but if you are a Patreon subscriber and you send me a message, I promise I will respond. And so somebody suggested I bring back the time travel question. So she said, even though you know, you're updating and people have already answered this question on your podcast, yep, I would like to know if their answer has changed post-pandemic. So the question is, you have a return trip.
I wish I could jump in a time capsule and ask myself what I said in that time to see if it's changed. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Well, so what I'm going to say to you now is I have a time machine and you get to have a return trip on the time machine. Where are you going to?
And it's anywhere, isn't it?
Anywhere or anywhere in your life?
Yeah, and do we get to interact, or is it literally an Ebenezer Scrooge, just a voyeur Peeping Tom time travel?
You can do whatever you want when you're there. Yeah. You can just be a voyeur, or you can interact as much as you want. You got 24 hours,
and I have to spend the 24 hours in the one place.
It's a one way trip. It's a one way round trip.
Yeah. Okay.
If that makes sense.
Oh man. Can I go forward as well or just back?
No one's ever asked, but yes, absolutely. Why not?
I can go forward?
Why does it only have to go backwards? That is absolutely...
It'd be a pretty bootleg time travel machine if we could only go one direction in time.
All right. So firstly, here's what I'm going to fucking say.
Yep.
Is that this is already paid off as me asking this question. So to that Facebook,
right,
that Patreon person,
yeah,
I firstly will say to you, I wish I knew your name to give you a personalized shout out, but I will say this, congratulations. It was good to ask this question.
Brilliant.
No one's ever thought about it. This is post-pandemic thinking. What if we go forward in time?
Yeah, well, I would probably, so hopefully everything going well, I start getting up in my age towards 2100, right? So I reckon I'll go
years old.
Yeah. So 2100. Yeah. So I'll be about, I calculated when I was quite young. I'm like, yeah, if I live to 112, I could see out the 21st century, try and get into the 22nd. Okay. I'm going to go out another 100 years in front of that. Okay. So let's go. I'll go to 2300. Check in, see how it's going. Chat to some people, take a few photos. Do I get to take some photos? Is that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, cool. Come back, let everyone know, all right, this is where we're going to end up, all right? Or you could listen to the kooky Breakfast Radio co-host who claims he can travel through time and and finally we can sort this out once and for all. So I think that will problem solved. There we go.
Okay, there's so many flaws in that, but we don't have the time to explore them today. We'll have to do that next time. Ellis Dyson, your book. What is your book called?
Yes, it's called When It Drops, and it's out.
So people can find that where they find books. Is there an audio version where you read it?
Yeah, that's the other thing. That sort of got delayed due to everything. So hopefully you'll be able to listen to it in the future. In the meantime, if you're happy to use your eyes, yeah, I guess my Instagram is the easiest place to jump on all sorts of links to find the silly things that I'm doing, like the exercise classes and the books and the podcasts and the new upcoming comedy venue. So yeah, jump on that. A.E. Dyson is my one. And yeah, you can have a read. That's the problem with all this content, Will. I'm like, surely you can't listen or watch or read Alex Dyson 7 days a week. I mean, pick one and go your favorite medium and just go with that, I would say.
There is a worry at the moment, I think, that like so many people are obsessed with, you know, producing content. But I think a lot of the places we actually consume that content, we're not consuming them. I think people listen to podcasts when they go to the gym or like, yeah, they're still going for a walk. They're still doing some of those things. But I actually feel like, I certainly feel like on a personal level, I'm not listening to as much stuff or consuming as much stuff as I was. Maybe more movies and Netflix and things you might actually sit down in front of, series. But that sort of day-to-day, while I'm waiting, while I'm going from one thing to the other sort of content, I'm not actually, you know, sometimes I watch that video while I'm in the back of an Uber or something going somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I listened to your podcast, Willosophy, when I was in Africa. I was in my tent lying down in a break while the animals are all hiding. Went in the tent and I listened to, I think, you and Clem Ford in that one. I listened to you with Andy Lee when I was driving towards the national park outside of Darwin. Litchfield, that's the one. And Sean McAuliffe. And the Sam Mack one while we were driving to Africa as well. So, yeah, I haven't been traveling as much, so not getting a chance to listen to as much philosophy. But I really love it, man.
I do wonder, because a lot of people say to me, they say they listen to the podcast when they're overseas to get a taste for home. Is the fact that people aren't going to be able to travel overseas going to hurt my podcast numbers? This is the biggest issue.
Potentially. It shouldn't. It shouldn't. You know, going for a walk is a good as time as any to listen to philosophy. But, yeah, you always do an amazing job, man. So, it's thank you so much for having me on.
No, I appreciate it, mate. And thank you for coming back on. Okay, let's stop this so we can do your one.